Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of December 2019. Welcome to episode 55 of this podcast series, and the concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this sort of, pretty much, the books I read during December. These are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts, not exactly spoilers for the podcast, since those are just lists, and here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. Billy D. reported that he was excited to listen, and I put Black Hawk on the Facebook post for that episode, and Ranger Gord had some things to say about that 70s version of the character. For some reason, I have a slight fondness for that brief mercenary era of Black Hawk. If you're going to set something in the 70s era, as it was, that's where you needed to put them. Think about it. Terrorism across Europe, shaky and brutal regimes in Africa and South America. The end of the Vietnam War, post-Watergate, that was where to put them. I guess the reading public didn't agree. Say, Gord continues, doesn't Latveria have a security problem around that time, especially with some busybody family in long underwear that just can't stay home and raise their kids? Oh, Gord, if there was ever an intercompany crossover that we needed, it was that one. The Blackhawks are tasked with having to cross over into the other comics universe to take down four losers in blue who keep trying to overthrow a legitimate European government. Presidential harassment. That last episode also received social media love from Mick Ari, Chris from Professor Frenzy, Dino Mutt, Tim Price, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Sir Iowa's Joe, Pat from the Long Box Crusade, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, Vinny G. and Frady III, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Luke Giaconetti and Gene Hendricks from the Two True Freaks Podcast Network, Karen from Between the Pages, James Williams from Karen from Between the Pages, and the lovely Sutherlands from the Rad Adventures Network. Thanks for all that support, everybody. And now, on to the books that I read last month. And as I do on this show, I'm categorizing the books that I read. And first, are those issues that I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. For Quarterman 146, I read Captain Glory number 1 and Night Glider number 1, both from the Kirby line of Topps Comics. And, of course, on the national holiday, December 4th, Doomsday, I picked up the book I talked about on the third episode of Doom Speak, Dr. Doom, number 3. And this is a spoiler, so don't tell, but in the upcoming episode 4 of that show, I plan to also talk about the new Doom 2099 issue that came out as part of their very recent 2099 event. And comics for listening to podcasts. There are more of these than usual because of the DC Universe app and the fact that I love following along with comic book podcasts if I have the chance. And that app gives me much more chance to do that. And so, to listen along with Mike Peacock's podcasting efforts of new episodes of Justice's First Dawn, I read Justice League of America 95, 99, 104, 105, and 106. All of those, again, on the DCU app. And I was very pleased to see a new episode of From Crisis to Crisis hit my iDevice. And I jumped on the DC app and read Superman Man of Steel 50. This is the start of the Trial of Superman, which was covered on episode 227 of that podcast. And then on to new comics that we read right off the shelves. Dial H for Hero number 9. Miguel and Summer in Metropolis, and their plan at this point involves mostly just being interns at the Daily Planet. But the operator, a.k.a. Robbie Reed Sakamaji, has a mission for them, and it involves not just the H-dial, but the other three dials as well. That's right. Next issue, it's four dials on infinite Earths. Justice League Dark 17. Stop me if you've heard this one before. There's drama in the magical world. As a matter of fact, magic itself is in danger. A super magical, super bad guy has bad magical plans, and a team of our magical heroes has to join forces to stop them. Because that has pretty much been every issue of this title. And unfortunately, issue 17 did not have enough character bits and moments to lift it up from beyond that. I'm not ready to dump this one just yet, but if it doesn't turn around soon... And I'm counting these next ones, because they are very recent, even though they were sent to me by Sir Iowa Joe, including Jane Foster Valkyrie, from just a few months ago. In this issue, Heimdall is dead, and as the lead Valkyrie, her job is to take him to the afterlife. But he's not so sure he wants to go to Valhalla, so Jane takes him on a tour of possible afterlifes. And he does make a choice. Very well-written story by Jason Aaron and Al Ewing. Some lovely prose in this one. Joe also sent Future Foundation 2 and 4, featuring the most troublesome members of Marvel's worst family, the Richards. And what Reed does in this series is pull all of the smartest kids in the multiverse together to save the future. And so what the kids will have to do, we're talking Julian Alex Power, Artie and Leech, the Uhari, that's Vil and Wu, and what they have to do in these issues is find the scattered parts of Molecule Man. This is all in the aftermath of the most recent Secret Wars, a.k.a. that time when Dr. Doom came this close to bringing the multiverse under his benevolent rule. And these were okay. The kids of the Marvel U are not my favorite team of teens, but at least little Franklin Richards wasn't in there, so that's a definite positive. Joe also sent Agents of Atlas 3 and 4, written by Greg Pak, a group of young heroes, Silk, Shang-Chi, Giant Man, and Amadeus Cho among them, have been drafted by former FBI agent Jimmy Woo into his Agents of Atlas. What I like about this is the international nature of it. We have characters from New York, of course, but also Seoul, Shanghai, and Mumbai, as well as the portal cities of Pan. There are some interesting bits of the business side of the superhero business, and young love and relationships, of course. I kind of like these, but I do feel that not having issues 1 and 2 lessened my ability to understand these. But then on the other hand, 3 and 4 should have done a better job of explaining that to me so I didn't feel like I was missing out by not having 1 and 2. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just a little hard to understand under any circumstances. And to the general comic reading that I did, you may remember that the generous Canadian Rob Lance from the Comic Connection store of Oakville, Ontario, sent a ton of comics a few months back, and I read a handful of them here in December. Among those were Exterminators number 4, which wraps up this 1988 miniseries taking place during the Inferno event. I've mentioned before that I'm not real familiar with all the ins and outs of X-Men history, but even with that as an excuse, this one did not grab me even a little bit. But another one he sent, Plastic Man number 12, now this one totally worked for me. This is the mid-70s version of the book, and it's got that difficult balance of mystery and superheroics and humor, and it got it really well. Very enjoyable Bronze Age DC read. Thoroughly enjoyed that one. Ewoks, number 4. Not great, obviously, but interesting in that it went out of its way to get Wicket and Tibu into situations where they would battle much bigger beings, using skills similar to what they did in the movie Return of the Jedi. So there are three or four moments of, I see what you're doing here. The Governor and JJ, number three, a TV tie-in title, tying into a title I never saw an episode of, but I do vaguely remember the premise. A Midwestern governor is a widower, and so his 20-year-old daughter takes on the role of First Lady, and hijinks ensue. And to give this issue credit, I chuckled at least once during each of the three stories. And that is saying something. And modeling with Millie 51, this 1966 issue took the James Bond vibe of the era and then combined it with Millie the model. She and her buddies were attending a rock fest, and they do some go-go modeling because, you know, Millie. But there's a mystery involved, and secret agents and disguises, and all in all, it was a pretty decently solid comic book. And for my buddy Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, I read Namor 17 from John Byrne. This is the businessman Namor going up against business rivals Rand Meacham, which is cool because Danny Rand just recently died at the end of Power Man and Iron Fist. Except that, cue the dramatic music, the guy here isn't Danny Rand, it's the Super Skrull. And from Sir Iowa's Joe, I read True Believers Carnage Mind Bomb. This is as weird and creepy and dark as you would expect. Warren Ellis tells a wacky story, and Kyle Hotz draws crazy action. It was wild. And from Dr. Anthony the Engineer, an issue from 2018, The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman, number one. This one gets the six-issue mini off to a start, but other than laying the premise, it doesn't do a lot beyond that. I do like the Batman and Wonder Woman team, and the presence of old Irish, you know, Celtic-type characters and the Fae do interest me. But as one single issue, it read too fast, and it was too expensive. I mean, I didn't pay for it. But you know what I mean, right? And from the dollar boxes at Half Price Books, I read a comic tie-in. Dragonlance, Dragons of Spring Dawning, number one. I think I read a few of these novels, but that was many, many, many years ago. And I really don't remember the setting or really anything. But I thought that this one, put out by Devil's Due, really sets the stage for a potentially interesting pirate-based fantasy story. And from the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality, I read Flash Gordon number 2, a King Features book from 1966. It had two pretty decent stories with Flash and Dale and Ming, but I gotta say it was the short Mandrake the Magician story right in the middle that was my favorite. But it's always an experience to read these tie-in books from the 60s and early 70s. And from Carolina Comics and More, which I picked up last time I visited my dad, I read Planet of the Apes, number 12, from 1991, a black and white book from the Adventure imprint of Malibu Comics. In this one, an ape wedding occurs, and the city's mortal enemy visits, and he is not really welcome. Not a bad story, and it seemed like there was a good amount of world building that had gone on. Lots of characters and subplots that you knew were important. So pretty good read. And you can't beat comics with talking monkeys. It's a rock fact. And a bunch of kids' books that I read, mostly from Sir Rob's care package, and also some from the 3-for-1 sale at World's Greatest Comics. I read, actually a pretty good amount, Sad Sack, 184 and 203, Sad Sack USA, number 7, Bullwinkle, number 3, Archie Mysteries, 27 and 30, Josie and the Pussycat, 70, Dennis the Menace, Bonus Magazine, 152 and 161, New Terry Toons, 14, 16, and 45, Daffy Duck, 72, and Jughead, 133 and 135. The Terry Toons books mostly featured Heckle and Jekyll, but there was also some Mighty Mouse in there. And those ones were my favorites. Mighty Mouse always gets it done. The Archie Mysteries were books that I hadn't seen before, and I really enjoyed them. Each issue presented a standalone, full 22-page story that had the Riverdale gang working with a pair of forensic investigators to investigate local mysteries. Yes, it is CSI Riverdale. It's a bit of Archie meets Scooby-Doo meets Nancy Drew, and that combo actually worked reasonably well. And shout-outs to the Daffy Duck and Dennis the Menace books, which contain consistent examples of good, funny stories. And those two Jughead issues were from 1966, which was a pretty great era for any Archie book. All right, time to take a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read in December.
I crave superheroic content. Let's see what's on.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Nah, don't think so.
I'm Batman.
Not really what I'm looking for.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman!
Ugh, absolutely not.
This is Robin the Boy Wonder. I'm Batman.
Aha, now that's more like it.
If you see Adam West as the one true Batman, then this is the podcast for you. Tune in every other Thursday on your favorite podcast source to hear Tim and Paul discuss the 1966 series and everything connected with it. What's the podcast called?
To the Batpoles. To the Batpoles. To the Batpoles.
And we're back to talk about the trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month. Around this time of year, I like to do some seasonal reading. And around this time of year, that means some Christmassy and holiday-based comics. Now, a lot of these ones that I read came from the aforementioned Sir Rob Lance, and a few were ones I nabbed from Pulp Reality, or they may have come from some other source. From 1993, I read the Bone Holiday Special. It was only a 5-page Christmas story, but it also had cool sketches and early Bone art. But the best part was a 6-page interview with creator Jeff Smith. Very detailed and very interesting talk about art in general, about Smith's life, and the history of Bone. Very enjoyable. Archie Giant Series 217 and 241, these were both Betty and Veronica Christmas spectaculars. Nice range of stories, well curated. And Archie Giant Series 219, aka Little Jinx Christmas Bag. And I have to say this. As much as I dislike Little Jinx and her cast of characters, and I find most of their stories quite annoying and not at all fun, this issue has one of the best Christmas stories I've read in a kid's comic. I have read the story before in a different Archie holiday collection, but it was good to run across it again, and that story is Do Not Open Until Christmas, which is about Gigi's rich parents not spending the holidays with her, but Jinx and her friends support her and take her in. The story does not mention this next part, but I take it that Gigi's parents are separated or divorced, because they are each spending the holidays in different exotic locales, assuming the other parent would be with Gigi. It's possible that they could just be out-of-touch rich parents, but I do think that kids in the 70s could easily have read this as separation or divorce and identified with that. For this story, and this story alone, let me say, Lil Jinx, good job. And from early 2007, the DCU Infinite Holiday Special, a collection of stories reflective of DC in that era. Shadow Pact got a story, and it wasn't bad, written by Bill Willingham. Both the Supergirl story, All I Want for Christmas, and the Superman story, Yes, Tyrone, There Is a Santa Claus, are solid. That last one being an Elseworld story that includes a splash page of Superman punching Batman, Batman being dressed as Santa. It's pretty hard to beat that. And Flash and Batwoman also have quite good stories in here. Not a bad read at all. DC curates these holiday collections, edits them quite well, I found, having read a bunch of them over the years. And from Hoopla, I found Pep Digital 33, Archie Holiday Hijinks. The lead story is Archie and the gang having to fill in for all of Riverdale's mall Santas, who have all gotten sick at the same training meeting. Lots of other reprints about Christmas trees and gifts and last-minute shopping and all that seasonal stuff. Mostly about love being the answer. Very enjoyable, and again, another well-edited, well-put-together collection. And this last one doesn't totally fit the premise in terms of its content, but I'm going to say it does by title. From the 50-cent bins at Pulp Reality, this is the Marvel 80-page Winter Special, although technically it's Marvel Superheroes number 12. Three full-length stories, Doctor Strange, Falcon, and Iron Man, all of which were somewhat in the, you know, that's okay sort of category. Nothing great, nothing earth-shattering, but decent enough. And three full-length stories for two quarters? Not a bad deal. We mentioned before the pack of books sent in recently by Sir. I was Joe Crawford, and that included a few recent books from Vault Comics, She Said Destroy, 3 and 4. What I liked about this was the setup. It's a story that is based around fantasy tropes with knights and the fae and witches, but it is firmly in a sci-fi setting of a colony planet. So just that mix of sci-fi and fantasy elements was enjoyable. And the book is very interesting looking. The colors are very striking. So in a lot of ways, it is a title that stands out from the rest. And whenever I see thick books or trades in the cheap bins, it's hard for me to resist. So from the 50-cent boxes, I picked up a trade that included Skeleton Key Roots 1 through 4, a slice-of-life book that isn't quite a manga, but is certainly reminiscent of that style of work. We basically have a bunch of young adults in Canada trying to balance friendship, love, college, jobs, and ice hockey. Basically, all of the things that go into growing up in Canada, the way I see it. Dr. Anthony the Engineer sent the first half of a 2017 Boom series, God Shaper 1 through 3, written by Cy Spurrier. In 1958, the laws of physics went screwy, and we're left with a world where almost everybody has a personal god, and the success of that human-god relationship determines, well, it determines pretty much everything. It's an interesting premise, but as a story, it just wasn't really to my tastes. But again, that's the very personal reaction to that. Dr. Anthony also sent a trade that collected The Mission 1 through 6, the story of an ordinary fellow who is given a strange task, a mission, if you will, by a being who might be the angel Gabriel. Although by the end of the book, we think maybe this being is on the other side. It's an interesting story that was first conceived of as a screenplay, as is discussed in the intro material to the book. And it does definitely read this way. It doesn't really read as a comic somehow, but the characters are good. The premise is very good. And it was a solid, quick read. Dr. Anthony also sent the start of an Aftershock series, Stronghold 1 and 2. And this one was a cool premise. And these first two issues delivered on that premise pretty well. The idea is that one unassuming man is the key to global balance between good and evil. And the role on the good side, played by the Stronghold, and their job is to keep this guy blissfully unaware of who and what he is, which is a superpowered godlike being. Because if he knows and begins to exercise that power, the adversary will have to respond in kind, and then things will go haywire across the entire planet. And then issue one, he had a strange moment of realizing his powers, and then in issue two, someone tells him, for a fact, who he is. So a very interesting start to a series. Would like to know where that one went. And from Hoopla, I picked up the next trade of a series I've been working my way through, Doctor Who, the 13th Doctor, 9 through 12. In this arc, we meet an old friend of the Doctor, another Time Lord, as a matter of fact, the Corsair, presenting as a female pirate, complete with cutlass. Somehow, she manages to talk the Doctor and the fam into aiding her with a little thievery, although at least she promises the thievery is in support of a good cause. Good story, and again, I always have to mention when we're doing a TV tie-in, the likenesses in these issues are excellent. I recently heard an interview on the show Deconstructing Comics with Klaus Janson, and after that I picked up from Hoopla the first trade of a series of a title that he co-wrote with Pablo Raimondi, that sounded interesting, Sacred Creatures 1 through 6. In it, the offspring of angels and humans known in the Bible as the Nephilim have turned into manifestations of the seven deadly sins, bending and twisting humanity towards chaos and distress for thousands of years. And one poor fella, a recent college graduate and expectant father, finds himself in the middle of their most recent skirmish. As a matter of fact, his child, which is on the way, is the cause of all these recent troubles. Very interesting story. And they're getting ready to bring out the second volume. That was what the interview was about. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Hopefully it will hit Hoopla as well. And while I was poking around Hoopla, I found Sisters of Sorrow 1 through 4, a lady-led revenge story. A quartet of women living in an abused woman's shelter take up the task of systematically killing their abusers. It was not a terribly unique idea, but if you want revenge in your comics and you want a female-led comic series, Sisters of Sorrow, I think it could work for you. Iowa's Joe, who we've mentioned before, sent a few copies of a series a while back, and I finally got around to reading a bunch of it on Hoopla. It's a series I've heard good things about. And I read Black Science 1 through 16. The basic premise is a group trying to fix outer space future issues created as a result of dark and not allowed science experiments. That's the titular black science, sort of the equivalent to black magic, if you will. Our hero is Grant, who used to be part of the anarchist order of scientists, and he and his team, who are also his family, get thrown through dimension after dimension trying to repair his device, the Pillar, trying to figure out how it went wrong, or perhaps who on their team sabotaged it. This is Rick Remender writing, and that is solid, and a shout-out is deserved by Matteo Scalera for the art, which is a bit painterly, a bit, I'm not sure how to describe it, but if I say European, maybe you'll know what I mean. This was a dense read and a little tough to get into, but I dig the story, and I dig the weird places that it goes, and so I certainly expect to read some more Black Science, hopefully pretty soon. A while back, I talked about Derek William Crabb's care package. Derek is, of course, from the Fan Holes podcast, and he sent a bunch of old Legion of Superhero stories, and I supplemented with a couple from Hoopla as well when there was an ongoing story. So I ended up reading Adventure Comics 316, 332, 336, 337, 340 through 342, and then 346. These are some totally wacky and goofy and charming, I'll admit that, stories from the 60s, featuring everybody's favorite team of super future friends. These are largely stories about misunderstandings and what happens when you keep important information from your friends. But they're also largely stories about the power of friendship and the value of happy endings. They even pulled off the fake wedding scam in issue 337. Actually, it was a fake double wedding, and that is just too wacky. We also get the death of a Legionnaire, or at least the death of one-third of a Legionnaire, spoilers, and some budding romances. But like I said, mostly it's betrayals, faux betrayals, and all of the soap opera teen angst. Derek sent some more of these in, and I imagine that I will get back to them in a few months. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, I really enjoyed some of those Christmas stories. And Sacred Creatures and Black Science were very interesting reads. Plastic Man 12 was quite entertaining. The Mandrake story in Flash Gordon was a blast. But my favorite read, and I promise I'm not going to do this every month, but Dr. Doom versus Mephisto with a side of Lady Death? Yes. The brand new Dr. Doom number 3, favorite book of December. Now that's usually where these episodes end, but this is not just a month-end episode. After one more break, we're going to talk about the year in review here on the Comics Reading Journal, and the listener or listeners of the year will be announced.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
And we're back. And by we, I don't mean just me and that Dr. Doom force ghost hovering over my shoulder. Because I've been joined by network co-founder, it's M.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Comics Reading Journal.
How about that? Your first time here.
No, it's not. Wait. Yes, it is. That was the Quarterman.
See? I think it is. I think it is. I know. All these shows run together. You wanted to be here for the awarding of the Listener of the Year Award. Now, the award spent its maiden voyage here in the Midwest, in the Plain States, and then hung out for a couple years up in New England. And now the award and the throne, actually thrones, are heading south. And we are glad to bestow this prestigious honor on a wonderful couple of friends, a wonderful couple of podcasters.
And a just generally wonderful couple. We are pleased to announce the very rad Listeners of the Year. Countess Ruth and Count Darren of the Sutherlands.
Yay, congratulations!
Oh, thank you.
What a wonderful introduction. Thank you. We love being the Count and Countess of Sutherland.
That's a lot of fun.
If things go well, there may have been a trumpet fanfare to introduce you.
It's the end of the year. Our production budget is running out. Woo-hoo! So we'll see.
Use it all.
We're able to get that trumpet.
Use it all.
You started such a thing with the Count and Countess. Ruth has been getting all kinds of ideas, and we've been talking about how we have to get a coat of arms.
Yes, so I'm planning that.
We actually have an idea for that and have sought out a friend to help us out with that.
By friend, you know they mean some professional comics artist of some kind. Right?
I was going to ask, is that friend secretly Mike Graff? Sometimes.
Wouldn't it surprise me? Speaking of which, just remembering back to our online and now in real life acquaintanceship, and the first real true super act of generosity that the Sutherlands bestowed, you were involved with, Em.
Oh, this was a heist.
Because
this was a grand
it involved
heist.
Me being out of the house. I was out of town when something came and you hid it from me. And
that was excellent. That I don't actually remember how, but I received a message from the Sutherlands that said, by the way, there will be some Mike Grell art on its way to your house. And it was timed in such a way that it was about 4 or 5 months before your 50th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I immediately called my mom while you're out of town and said, you need to find this poster roll. You need to take them out immediately. You need to take the next 4 days to let them flatten. And then we need to take them to a professional framer and then hide them.
Uh-huh. That came sometime in the summer. And then I opened them up on my birthday. So everybody here on this call did a pretty awesome job of hiding that from me, because that's one of our running jokes with some members of the hashtag comic book circle of life is rule one, get to the mailbox before your spouse does. So usually it's so I can hide the comics.
In this case, it was so I can hide professional art very generously gifted for
wonderful.
An important event.
Wonderful.
But
that worked out perfectly.
It did.
That was one of our highlights, yes.
Our acquaintanceship has been random acts of kindness, or in my case, random acts of leverage, just appearing out of nowhere, which was all fun and great, but this last year, we have actually been able to hang out with you guys mm-hmm. and get to know you, like, personally. It's honestly been one of the highlights of the year. getting to see people in generally, but getting to hang out with you guys has been
now,
awesome.
Before we dive into that, you were talking to a friend, Em, and how did you describe this phone call?
I did mention that I needed to leave work immediately because I had stuff to do, and when they asked what, I said, I need to go call my fairy godparents. I think is a pretty good shorthand.
What a compliment.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's more important than this award.
Yes, that's why I'm here. I sniped
See?
It.
Oh, man. You're good.
It.
You're good. Well, just to recount some of our 2019, though I can't remember, we may have hung out with you last holidays, technically in the end of 2018, but that doesn't matter. We're counting it as 2019 because it is very handy that y'all live about 2 hours from my parents and you are literally on the way.
You're so fortunate to be on your driving path.
We've said to each other that we're blessed by that fortuitous coincidence because, you know, we get the opportunity to see you more than we could otherwise. And I mean, really, it is a blessing for us to get to see you guys more often than we would have otherwise. And that's fabulous. All the way back to the very first time that you drove through here. Mm-hmm. I remember what Mrs. Quarterbin said to you that first time that you were going to meet us. And she said, wait, you're going to meet people that you've only ever dealt with online. Should I expect you to come back?
Do you have your GPS tracking chip on? Because, but since then, Mrs. Quarterbin has made your acquaintance as well.
Absolutely. So she's much more lovely than you.
Hey, I think we all know where we stand.
Certainly on these holiday travels, it is all three of us, so all five of us, that get to hang out for a little bit, which is always fun. But then we had the mega hangout time at Gallifrey One this last February in Los Angeles. And I thought, to me, one of the highlights was us having breakfast each morning. And I remember it was just the four of us, right?
I was going to say, there was another irreprochable person there, wasn't there?
some fifth wheel.
Yeah, the irresponsible shrug.
Irrational guy. I have no idea who you're talking about, and I'm sure he has no idea either.
that was really a fun time. Just the nature of that convention, because of the space limitations, there are attendant limitations, mm-hmm. which means if you're lucky enough to go, you see everybody who's there.
Yeah.
Even when us or Shag or Mark Baker Wright or all the people that we saw there,
yeah.
Brian, et
cetera. Brian Ng.
You know, even if we weren't at the same panel, we saw each other in between because there was only one hallway.
Yeah, and you had to pass everyone.
Gathering center, and it's not like Baltimore or Heavens to Betsy Dragon Con or something mm-hmm. where you could be there with someone and not see them the entire time.
That's true.
Cannot happen at Gallifrey One. So
that was a great convention, greatly improved by the company.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was fun. Do you guys, Sutherlands, have a particular Gallifrey One remembrances or stories?
What I remember first and foremost is that Elm looked more like the 13th Doctor than the 13th Doctor did.
Because yeah.
That was an awesome coat.
Because so it was good. Sort of cosplay.
It was
not really.
Yeah, cosplay light.
It was cosplay light.
It was good. Good.
I'm sure that you hopped in the TARDIS every night after we last saw you. That's the reason you would just vanish.
The only problem was there was one evening you did actually disappear.
I did actually disappear. That did
That's
that
right.
happen.
So you missed dinner with me and Paul Cornell. I mean, there may have been other people there. I don't remember.
You had dinner with Paul Cornell?
I know. This is the first time I'm hearing about it.
Why am I just now hearing about this for the first time?
You know what? Paul Hicks has been to Heroes Con, too. I know.
Oh, you're kidding. I had no idea.
Close to the West. But I love that Babylon 5 panel.
Gosh.
Oh,
that was
sort of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was so awesome because we're all big Babylon 5 fans and we're all big JMS fans. And it was fantastic that we all got to go see the Babylon 5 20th anniversary panel together. That was definitely a highlight of the weekend.
Then during the summer, I took a solo trip to see my dad. Sorry, Em.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm going to abandon you and go to Virginia Beach next year.
Oh,
it's fine.
Oh, man. You're killing me. So that was just me and Darren and Ruth. And we hung out at a comic store. What was it called? Give it a shout out.
Ultimate Comics.
We went to Ultimate Comics. And then we went to a pretty cool diner that was just nearby.
Yeah, the Shiny Diner.
The Shiny Diner. And I like that comic store because... Well, it had like a little mini art gallery.
Oh,
yes.
In the hallway, and that was down to the back to the toy section. Am I remembering that close mm-hmm. to right?
That's
you are.
Right.
And you found something special at the toy.
I think there was a Dr. Doom in there. I think.
That's right.
I think.
Dr. Doom Lego, wasn't it?
Kind of hard for him to stand up, but he's proudly on my desk with all of my other Dr. Dooms. I think that sets an appropriate tone of menace for students. That's all I'm saying, okay?
Interesting.
To be surrounded by dooms. I think it's... Now, I did want to ask you to elucidate on one thing, and that's you sent some pretty cool books to me recently, and it sounded like they were from Baltimore Comic-Con.
I think you would appreciate how much we paid for those.
Yes.
That's what I'm the most proud of. We were being frugal.
They were less than a quarter.
Yes.
Yes!
See, that's one of the things I've liked getting to know Ruth and Darren over the years, is finding out just how, not cheap, well, not cheap, what's budget conscious mm-hmm. Ruth is.
There you go.
There, yes, excellent, yes.
And
Ruth is very frugal.
There was one time when you were at Baltimore and Dragon Con were on the same weekend.
Oh.
So you pulled some where you took a red-eye flight, so you didn't need a hotel room that night. There's something crazy like that. I don't remember
it
the details.
It was a Southwest bargain sale. Like, they're like,
it was like
$39.
Yeah, I thought it was $49, but yeah, it was something like that. It was some ridiculous price we got. But we had to do it because we had missed meeting Mark Schultz so many times.
Right.
And we have mutual friends with Mark Schultz. So it's like all of our mutual friends knew him, but we had never had a chance to meet him in person, even though we had talked with them and exchanged emails and stuff. So we had to do that when the opportunity presented itself with that very inexpensive flight. So, yeah, we were there and back in the same day. We had like a before breakfast flight there and a after dinner flight back.
Amazing.
Insane.
Amazing. Any other quick, just general budget travel tips from Ruth?
Keep in mind places you want to go and look for what the currency rates are. Be willing to stay at a budget hotel. You don't have to worry about, you know, having something fancy, because the important thing is, to me, is to getting out and about and seeing the place by walking, by public transportation, use the bus, use the train, because that you get a real feel of the city or get to see the countryside that way.
And I think another thing that benefits her is she has a husband that has to fly for work, so he earns air miles.
That is true.
We don't pay for flights, so that is a huge help.
Didn't you guys manage to see the Tintin Museum? Was that this year?
Oh, that was wonderful.
That was a really unexpected trip. We actually had time scheduled off for friends that we know from the West Coast who were going to be coming through. And so we had scheduled 2 or 3 days off from work early in that week to see them as they drove through. And then later in the week, we were going to be off to go to HeroesCon because Ron Randall was going to be there. And unfortunately, the wife of this couple that we know so much, she's been battling cancer off and on, and she had a relapse, and she was going through chemotherapy again. So they had to cancel their trip. So we had these days that we already had off. So Ruth, being budget conscious, she said, well, here's my current list of places we want to go. Where can I find a discounted flight? And sure enough, there was Belgium. And she'd been wanting to take me back there. We hadn't been in 15 years. And the Hergé Museum had been built since we were last there.
Oh, nice.
So it was on her list. And she said, we can go.
That's probably one of the exceptions. We usually don't buy souvenirs when we travel. We just take photographs. But for that one, we bought a few souvenirs, so couldn't help it.
Oh, anyone we did. Yeah, that's who follows another... you on social media knows that you take photos of places.
Beautiful. That's
true.
That is. Yeah, that's another way we save money, is we don't buy souvenirs usually. But the exceptions were when we went to Greece, we bought owls because I love owls. And when we went to Belgium, we bought stuff from the Hergé Museum, including, I think, a little coin that made its way to somebody I know.
Yes. It was perfect. Perfect. I like getting money for free. That's kind of a win-win. Am I right, Ruth?
That's basically your favorite thing.
I remember the time, was it 3 or 4 years ago, when Mom gave me a roll of quarters for Christmas and said, hey, here's 40 comics.
Oh, perfect.
Yep.
I love that.
And just, you know, like we said, just throughout this past year, but all this time that we've known you, you've been faithful in feedback to this show and Dorkness to Light, and good friends, and just very generous supporters of us and our podcast. And just, we are so grateful to all that you've done for us over the years.
I remember when Darren first introduced me to your show and just being so impressed with the chemistry that you two have. Love the relatively geeky name. I thought that was brilliant, and have been a loyal fan.
It's one of those things. Your shows are always a delight to us. And it, you know, sometimes one of us gets to listen before the other, or only one of us gets to listen at all, maybe because of a work requirement. But it's one of those things where if one of us has listened to the show first, or listened to one somebody else hasn't heard, it's like the next time we're on the phone, it's like, oh, this is what they were talking about. And this is what they said. So it's part of our conversation. Yeah, thank you both.
And as you know, podcasting with family has its own traumas and dramas.
Difficult.
And behind the scenes.
TMZ, behind the music, behind the microphone.
I mean, its own special joys. That's what I meant.
Nice reframe.
Yes.
I was getting too sincere there at the moment.
Like, Well, again, thank you guys for all you've done and all you do. You are awesome and well-deserving of the title
Listeners of the Year.
Thank you.
And as you may be able to tell from the change in recording quality, I am back all by my lonesome for this last segment of the episode. And I'm going to end the year-end episode with the same type of reading analysis I did last year, where I borrowed a page from, I think it was Chris Ivey, of keeping track of all the reading that you do during the year. And since I did that last year as well, now I can make comparisons and see any changes or trends. So what I'm going to do here is give an analysis of the nearly 1,500 comics that I read during 2019, which was up about 150 issues from the year before. First, by publisher. Last year, DC and Marvel were well over half, close to 60% of all the comics I read, with DC far outpacing Marvel. I do imagine that that'll hold pretty true with Image probably at third, but I do feel like I read a lot of Archies as well this year. And looking at the numbers, this is how it all fell out. DC was first, to no surprise, but at 27%, that was a big drop from last year. Marvel closed the gap, coming in at 19%, but far ahead of number three. So I am pretty predictable, I guess, in that the big two were about half the books that I read. But that is a pretty big drop from last year. Image did come in third at about 6.5%, about the same as last year. But Dynamite was almost there at 6.3%. Almost every one of those Dynamite books was a digital. Dynamite has a very strong presence on the Hoopla app. Archie did come in next, fifth place at 5%, about the same as last year. Although, that number is a bit tricky to calculate because a lot of those Archie digests are hundreds of pages long, but I counted each as just being one comic. And then coming in sixth place and seventh place, just behind Archie, were Titan and Dark Horse. The only other publisher with over a 3% of my personal market share was Boom, and Gold Key came in just short of that. Those publishers make up 82% of the books I read, and all of the other companies, none of which were over 2%, make up the remaining 18. These included, in no order of magnitude, publishers like Alterna, IDW, Harvey, and Lion's Forge. In terms of the format of the books I read, this was a significant change from last year. I know that some of my best and favorite listeners flinch at the word floppy, but you know, I kind of like saying it. So floppies were around 70% last year of what I read, but only 53% this year. Digital jumped from 30 to 35, leaving physical trades at between 12 and 13%, a huge increase from last year. A good chunk of that was wrapping up The Walking Dead, and then the Doctor Doom Black Panther trade, but this was also some stuff that I bought cheap, and some sent in by lovely listeners, and some other ones nabbed from the local public library. Now, one category that I wasn't sure about was going to be the era from which I read comics. For the most part, I broke it into decades, the 70s, 80s, the 90s, and the aughts. I grouped everything before 1970 in one catch-all category. Although I did break up the 2010s to capture actual new comic, so there is a category of 2018 and 2019, and then separately the other years of the decade. And these are cover dates, by the way, if you really, really want to be picky. Last year, the biggest category was those new books, books less than 2 years old, at almost 30%. But that dropped this year to 20%, largely because our pull list has been cut down from 6 or 7 books a month to more like 3 to 5. The biggest single era was the rest of the 2010s, meaning 2010 to 2017, which was about 27%, up a bit from last year. But for both years, just about half the books I read came from this decade. and that's a good-sized surprise to me. Moving backward in time, the books are pretty evenly split by the decades. The 2000s are about 10%, then another 13% of the 90s, 11% from the 80s, 12% from the 70s, and then a little bit over 5% from before the 70s. But that number probably underrepresents what I actually read, because when I run into collections like a DC Special or a lot of the war and horror books, or the Archie Digest that collect books from multiple eras, for simplicity's sake, I just went with the publication date. So a war book published in the early 70s, with stories maybe from the 50s and 60s, gets counted as a 1970s book. Or a PEP digital collection, with stories from the 1950s and onward, gets counted usually as 2010s. So actual stories, actual page count for pre-1970s is probably closer to 10%. But as crazy and nitpicky as I can be, even I have to draw a line somewhere. And the last category that I wanted to investigate was the price I paid for the books. And this one is not scientifically valid. I try my best to keep track of this during the year, but a lot of this is based on my memory or our approximations. So again, I broke it into ranges, but that first range, and by far, not even close, the most popular price I paid for a comic that I read. I know you might be thinking, was it 25 cents? That's not even close. It's less than that. Because about 3/4 of the comics I read last year, which is up about 5%, were free. These are from the Hoopla digital app, the DC app, those library trades, as well as books that came from the generosity of you lovely listeners via the hashtag Comic Book Circle of Life. Another 2% were books that I paid between 1 and 24 cents for, which were mostly the World's Greatest Comics 6 for a dollar sale. And then come the quarter books. They're part of the 25 to 49 cent tranche. Included here are books from World's Greatest Comic Sales and Comic Town, which have 3 for a dollar sales. Also, Carolina Comics and More has 3 for a dollar boxes. I hit there whenever I visit my dad. This is about 7% of my reading, cut in half from last year. And that's because, as I have talked about elsewhere, quarter bins are a dying breed around here. The number of books in the next category, 50 cents to 99 cents, doubled to about 8%. And that's mostly because of the new store I found in the city where my campus is, Pulp Reality, home of 50 cent boxes. And in an area that doesn't have quarter bins, sometimes you have to settle for that. A dollar to $1.99, that range includes obviously dollar boxes, and also those Marvel True Believer books, and Alterna Comics, which are printed new at a price point of $1.50. That's about 4.5% of what I read. The broad price range of $2 to $4.99, which is obviously going to be where the most of new comics hit, was about 4.5% also, but that is down from almost 8% last year, which is, again, from cutting back on the pull list. And the last category, comics that I paid more than $5 for. You should all be very proud of me on this one, because there were only 2 books that hit this category. Half of those were Detective 1000, and the other half was an annual of some kind. Well, that was a lot of talking, and I hope you enjoyed listening to all this talk. Thanks for hanging with me for this probably extra-sized end-of-year episode. Next month, we go back to the standard format and talk about just the books I read in January. And that episode ought to be out sometime in early February. If you have a feel for the types of comics that you read, the Marvel DC breakdown, or the digital floppy breakdown, or what era you think you read the most from, let me know that as well if you'd like. I'd love to hear about that. You can send that feedback via email relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. And I say this for the entire year. Thanks for listening. Keep the pages turning.